All elves know that the four major food groups are coffee, iced coffee, cafe latte, and cold press.
You like coffee, huh?
Is iced coffee coffee?
Uh-huh.
Then yes! Hey listeners, we're here to help you get the perfect gift for the coffee lover in your life. I'm talking about Sparkplug Coffee. Sparkplug starts with premium Arabica beans that have been directly sourced and fairly traded. They offer blends and roasts to suit any taste, including decaf and half calf. But what makes Sparkplug truly special is that they deliver this great coffee to your home or office within a week of custom roasting it here in Toronto so that it always reaches you fresh and at its peak flavor. You can order Sparkplug as you need it or take advantage of Sparkplug's autopilot set it and forget it delivery so that you'll never run out of fresh coffee again. And right now Sparkplug has a special offer for Top 100 listeners. If you use the promo code TOP100PROJECT at checkout, that's all one word, TOP100PROJECT, Sparkplug will give you 10% off your next coffee order. The promo applies to any size coffee order, and you don't need to be a new customer to take advantage. So what are you waiting for? Make great coffee the gift you give yourself or someone you love this year. Plug yourself in at sparkplugcoffee.com.
I want one.
Top 100.
Top 100.
Top 100.
Project.
And action.
Good Christmas, Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, and all that shit. And most rapturous thank yous for guzzling a seasonal beverage and listening to the next 133 project. Speaking of seasonal beverages...
Hey!
Our venture to talk about each and every one of the 123 movies on the AFI's 1998 and 2007 compilations of awesome big screen efforts was accomplished a full 3 years ago. So here we are, 133 Next 100 Project movies later, and we keep on going with reviews of things we want to review. And we'll be dusting you with spoilers today, so watch out for that. I'm the excitable northerner with some Christmas spirit, just a little bit, tiny bit, Ryan Ellis. And here's the big-eyed lady who sits on a throne of lies, my wife Bev.
That's me.
So the coming attractions trivia for this week's picture, and you know it's Elf. What is Will Ferrell's best role? Ron Burgundy? Frank the Tank, Ricky Bubby, Harold Crick, Mugatu and Zoolander, Buddy and Elf, or just something else altogether. And I said it's trivia, but actually, of course, it's obviously an opinion.
So I find Will Ferrell hysterical, just like everyone else. I need to shout out Brennan from Step Brothers.
Yeah, that's good.
You didn't mention him, which I recently rewatched and was delighted by all over again. But for my money, I love a Will Ferrell character with pathos, like Buddy or Harold Crick from Stranger Than Fiction. I think it's kind of a tie between those two. I know that Will Ferrell plays a great pompous asshole, oblivious idiot.
Ron Burgundy.
Yeah, Ron Burgundy. You know, I looked this up. What is Will Ferrell's funniest role? And in every single list, even though they were different on every other level, number one was always Ron Burgundy.
Okay.
For my money, I really like when he plays a little seriously, though. Really, though, there's like an embarrassment of riches to choose from when it comes to him. He really is gifted the world with so many iconic characters.
It's funny you said Elf and Stranger Than Fiction because those are my two choices, too, for some of the same reasons.
Oh, we agree.
His SNL characters. I wasn't watching the show when he was on it, but I've seen clips of it since. He was obviously great on that show, one of the all-time superstars of SNL in the history of the show. And everything I mentioned is funny. I don't really know Zoolander that well. Actually, he's pretty good in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Oh, I don't remember him.
He's one of those guys you said that everyone thinks he's great. I don't know. I feel like Will Ferrell and Jim Carrey's another one who've lost a lot of favor. Nicolas Cage, of course. Johnny Depp's in that list now. And of all those four guys, or a lot of other actors who really don't seem to be quite as revered as they once were for the thing they did so well, Ferrell's a guy I actually have come to like more as time has gone on.
His comedy has aged quite well.
But I don't know that everyone else feels that way.
Yeah, you could be right. I know plenty of people who never got him, didn't find him funny. But there was a point in time, roughly around when Elf came out, when he was one of the most bankable stars in Hollywood. And I say that because he could make a movie for a pretty low budget, like Anchorman or Elf or Step Brothers. And it was guaranteed to, well, maybe not guaranteed, he actually has had his share of flops, but it was pretty likely to make a metric ton of money. Talladega Nights is another great example. Like, those movies don't cost very much to make. The biggest expense is his salary, but he has kind of disappeared along with these other names you've talked about.
Adam Sandler at that same time frame was another guaranteed.
Adam Sandler at one point was
blockbuster.
Yeah, he was the most bankable star in Hollywood. Often, whoever the most famous comedian is, they are the bankable stars in Hollywood. I think right now Melissa McCarthy is considered one of the most, for ratio of bang for your buck of what you're going to pay for someone for, or sorry, what you're going to pay to make a movie versus what it's going to earn. Melissa McCarthy is way up there.
Well, speaking of all that, Elf made $170 million in the U.S. alone and $220 million worldwide.
And it only cost $30 to make.
Right, so that says an awful lot. And it was released by New Line just over 15 years ago on November 7th, 2003. So it is a modern Christmas classic. That was a great year for Christmas movies because not only was it this, Bad Santa was around that same time, both really funny and really great. And we don't like it, but a lot of other people do, Love Actually. That was a tremendous year for Christmas movies. And who knew at the time that three, and I don't know, maybe there's more, but at least three that one year in 2003.
And they're classics now, all three of them.
So you probably should remind people what the movie's about with Elf Skinny.
Will Ferrell is Buddy, a man raised as an elf who goes on a voyage to New York City to find his birth father, James Caan's Walter Hobbs, who is not real happy to learn that he is the dad of a 6'2" Christmas elf with serious boundary issues. But Buddy wins him over along with most other people he meets with his relentless Christmas cheer and unflappable persistence.
Certainly won me over. One thing about this movie is I don't remember liking it as much as I do now when I first saw it. I liked it. Bad Santa. I was always on board with that from the first time I saw it, and I was surprised that more people didn't seem to like it. It was popular enough, but it didn't feel like it got its due at the time. Elf did, and I liked it, but I like it more now, I think. Even though I don't laugh as much now, because I've seen the movie so many times. But anyway. In a nutshell, father and eldest son published picture book for upstart company, as Walter bails on his old job that he did very badly, actually. He was not a good employee. We'll get to that in a second. So a few more numbers before we get into the real conversation. Rotten Tomatoes critics, 83% of them liked the movie. 160 fresh, 32 rotten, but only 78% of audiences. And I'm surprised because I would have thought this would be a big audience picture.
Agreed.
Chris and I are going to cover Rocky IV in a couple of days. And the numbers on that are what you might expect. The critics didn't like it, but the audiences on Rotten Tomatoes are through the roof, at least comparatively speaking to the critics. Elf unexpectedly outgrossed that year Terminator 3, The Matrix 3, so Revolutions, Bad Boys 2, which I hated, of course, and Hulk. Who'd have thought that this nothing movie with this guy, he wasn't really truly bankable yet, and a newish director, Jon Favreau, who'd made one movie as a director, that was Made, a very small budget movie, would turn in this gigantic blockbuster, which was seventh at the 2003 U.S. box office. Lord of the Rings, Return of the King was number one, also a New Line production, and that was also the Best Picture winner. So, huge year for that company on those two fronts, and probably many others. Okay, we've gone on for a little while now. Christmas Eve. Well, we record this long before Christmas Eve, but it's Christmas Eve when it gets posted. What do we think of Elf?
This is one of my favorite Christmas movies.
Yeah, me too.
It's funny how so many of my favorite Christmas movies were really made when I was an adult, but it just absolutely works on me. I will complain about flaws because I actually think it's far from a perfect movie,
yeah.
But it all fades into the background when you just watch Will Ferrell in this phenomenal performance. There's just nothing like him as Buddy.
I think that's really the key thing here because as great as Brando, Nicholson, Pacino, Newman, Hackman, I don't know, all the great actors have ever been, the guys from long before in the 30s and 40s, and the guys working now, other than one name we'll say in a second, can you picture any of them doing this?
It's a rare talent.
To be able to be this silly, but also this committed to the role, to look like he does. They shot scenes with him dressed in that outfit in New York City and around the countryside as well. Dressed like that and having the confidence to look like that and hoping the movie will work as a comedy, because if it doesn't, he's going to look stupid the whole time.
We always say that comedy is commitment, and he is so fully committed to Buddy as a character and believing that there's nothing unusual about his outfit and that everybody buys into the same Christmas cult that he was brought up in. Is genuine surprise that the whole world isn't as cheerful as the elves in the North Pole.
Jim Carrey is the other name, by the way, and he could have done this role and would have done it well, I think, but doesn't have the same guilelessness that Will Ferrell seems to have even now in 2018. Carrey then, Carrey now has more of an edge. Well, even more so now, I guess, has an edge to him that does come across as if, I know what's going on here and I'd fucking kill you if I could. Will Ferrell doesn't...
Jesus.
Don't you think so? It's one thing I like about Carrey. He seems like he's a bit on the edge.
I agree.
Will Ferrell does not.
Carrey's never fully committed.
I think
he is. Like a man... No, but I mean, he always seems like a man acting. With the occasional exception, when he's playing a serious role like Eternal Sunshine, he's a good enough actor that he can get around it. But when he's doing comedy, it always feels like he's winking at you just a little bit. Whereas Will Ferrell, there's none of that. Will Ferrell's defining feature as a comedian is that he plays obliviousness perfectly. And sometimes he's playing somebody who's obliviously selfish arrogant, like Ron Burgundy or Ricky Bobby. Or sometimes he's playing someone who's oblivious in their loneliness, like Harold Crick, or oblivious in their good cheer and earnestness, like Buddy the Elf. But that's always a defining characteristic, and he is so 1,000% committed. And I always think, I mean, everybody probably thinks of this, but the scene where he gets hit by the car, for all I know, it could be a stuntman. Is it a stuntman?
I don't think you see his face when he walks onto the street in New York City as
Perfect
he goes
pratfall.
To the department store. I don't recall now. I've seen that scene so many times, but I don't remember. But it's just great that it's... But as he walks in the street, just bang!
It's such a perfect pratfall.
And dangerous, too. Obviously, the stuntman trained to do it. Maybe Ferrell did. I don't know.
It's like he doesn't even realize the car's hitting him while it's hitting
him. Right.
He doesn't brace for impact at all.
Now, even though we're already raving about the movie and we both love it, the sweetness and the humor, I've got a lot of reasonably good questions. I haven't asked reasonably good questions in quite a while. So two right off the bat. Why didn't Santa ever take Buddy back to the orphanage when he found him in the sack, whether it be that night or whatever else? Because Santa is magic. He could have done it that night, at least the next day. The second question, you can answer two at once. He has an actual name. Buddy is from the diapers. One of the elves sees that, the Buddy brand diapers, whatever the hell they're called. So that's why he's called Buddy. Why didn't Santa, this magical being that knows everyone's name, especially children, know his real name?
The name thing, correct. So my theory about why they couldn't take him back to the orphanage is that Santa's magic only works on Christmas Eve. He can't fly the sleigh.
What about the next
on
year?
Boxing Day.
Because I guess to bring him back a year later, that does seem a little
At
suspicious.
At that point, he's already attached to Papa Elf. It's
people talk
way
about,
too late.
People talk about Elf earlier this month, so maybe I'm stealing this from them, but I heard somebody say... that Santa owes a blood debt or something to Papa Elf, and that's why, here you go! I didn't mean for this to happen, but you're going to get him for sure, because you need a little son. And that's one of the things about this movie, too, that I don't mean to criticize, because it's obviously not supposed to be a big plot point, but Buddy bails on the only father he's ever known so easily and so quickly, poor Papa Elf. And even when the story's over, and it seems to have worked out, and he's got this family, and he's got a kid now with Jovi, he's only visiting Papa Elf. He still doesn't go back to where he really does belong, which is the North Pole.
Okay, but neither of us live with our parents either. He was 30 years old when he went to New York.
But he belongs there. He
no,
does
he doesn't.
I don't belong anywhere.
Point.
Yes, you do. You belong in the North Pole.
He kind of does. I guess what really would have been a happy ending to the story is if they just found a place in the North Pole for a human and made an exception for him, rather than being like, sorry, you're grown now. You just got to go find your people to live with because, you know, reasons.
I did like one of the nice touches in this movie, actually, that Buddy isn't bullied at the North Pole. The elves are talking smack at one point about him, but it is nice smack.
So there was an early version of the script where he was bullied. When the original script, it was kind of a little more like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, which it's clearly very inspired by, especially the production design.
Yeah, it's based on the old Rudolph special.
Yeah, they were bullying him and they were mean to him, and that was part of the reason why he had to leave the North Pole, is because all the other elves are mean to him. But Favreau decided to take that out and replace it with the elves just being nice, because there's no other explanation for why Buddy would be so sweet and earnest and guileless if he came from a place that had mean-spirited people, elves. There are some bad decisions that were made in this film, but that was a right decision. Their version of the North Pole is one of the most charming things. It's probably great that the first act of the film is so heavily in the North Pole, and it is so deeply, wonderfully sweet and charming and hysterically
and goofy.
Funny and goofy and watchable with the nostalgia of all the Rudolph stuff. The sets all look like Rudolph. Their outfits are a direct copy. They actually got permission from the production company that made Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Rankin Bass,
yeah, to copy everything directly. And then they got the snowman even. It's just so pitch perfect, and it's such a wonderful place to live. Mm. It absolutely wins you over immediately with all that.
Which is key, because the first act is good as it is, and the second act is good as it is. The third act is the worst part of the movie.
Oh.
We'll get to that a little later,
yeah.
I guess. But it's not like it's bad, it's just the first two acts are so great. And it's also not as funny in the third act. There are some jokes, but it's way more sincere. But then there are some sweet moments, and again, we'll talk about that very soon. But let's introduce other characters now, because of course his dad is Walter, James Caan. Walter, we see very early on, is bad at his job. He's on the naughty list for a reason. He's an asshole at work. Not that bad an asshole, but he's a dick. But he isn't a prick to his family. Another nice touch, I thought. Even though Michael says he's the worst dad in the world, he's not that bad to Michael. He's not present for Michael. He's not really present for his wife. But when he talks to Emily, Mary Steenburgen, on the phone, including on Christmas Eve, towards the end of the movie, he's not being, oh, Emily, I can't make it. Fuck you! make do without me, or any of those kinds of things. It's more like, I'm sorry I can't be there, but I gotta work.
Mary Steenburgen is wonderful as this not long-suffering wife, but she projects so much warmth, and she's so open, particularly when Buddy comes into their lives and her reaction to him. Because James Caan plays such a convincing asshole, you kind of need her in the film to convince the audience that he's not all bad.
Do you think he's an asshole to his family? Because I just said
I don't think he is. I agree with you that he's absent and he sits down for dinner and is like, I got stuff to do, and he goes away. But he's never truly a bad husband. He's gruff.
Yeah.
But then because she loves him and because she's so sweet, I, as an audience member, especially the first time I saw the film, you have to make this impression of this character. I remember just feeling like, well, he can't be an evil character because how else would he have a wife this sweet and warm?
And a good kid,
Michael's
too.
A good kid as well. Mm. Yeah, he's not perfect, but he's not a bad guy. And even at work, look at his employees. What's her name? Amy...
Sedaris.
Sedaris is Deb.
Mm-hmm.
She's a happy person. His employees are happy. They seem to trust him and they take him at his face value that he's a gruff guy, but they never really seem afraid of him.
I think we need to retract that, even though we've already said the word. I don't know if he's an asshole so much in this movie. I think he's just absent from his job. He clearly doesn't really like working for Michael Lerner's character. He's the real asshole in this movie, actually. Santa's gruff, too, and as you point out, he's a lazy Santa Claus and kind of indifferent. He's been doing this a long time. I think that's really fair to say about Walter also. Maybe he's not such a dick. It's just that he doesn't like his job very much. And because he has to work all the time, he can't really be there for his family. So he doesn't really want to be in his job. I can relate to that one. But he also can't be truly present at home because he has to work at home. I don't have to do that, at least.
So I'm going to express my unpopular opinion and say that I think James Caan was miscast.
That's not unpopular. I feel the same way.
Oh, yeah. I know you agree with me. I don't know how other people feel about it. I'm not saying I know who could have been cast in this role, but I actually think he's terrible in this part. His transformation at the end is so completely unconvincing. I don't know, I just need more warmth and sweetness from him, because it's a Christmas movie. There's something about him that fails to lockstep with Farrell, even though I know they're in conflict for the first half of the film.
That makes sense, yeah.
But he's too serious of an actor. There's nothing really funny about him. He just doesn't do comedy well enough to pull this part off, even though he's the straight man.
He's in meh mode, I would say. Kind of like Vince Vaughn in Dodgeball, or Edward Norton in The Italian Job. Maybe those actors would deny this, but it doesn't seem like they wanted to be in those movies all that much.
He's phoning it in. He's afraid to be embarrassed. That's really clear that he is an actor, doesn't want to look silly.
And maybe this is a key moment, and this wasn't written by him, so he didn't create this moment. At the end, when he's faking the Christmas carols, Dad, Santa Claus is coming! And then, of course, that helps the sleigh rise. And maybe that's why you do that, to have it be that when this guy's finally won over, then Santa can truly have his sleigh fly and he's fine. But he has seen Santa Claus minutes before this. He's reconnected with his youngest son. He's reconnected with his oldest son. He's even said, I love you. I don't want you to go.
He quit his job.
He quit his job over all this. So why is he still not able... Okay, he doesn't want to sing in public, maybe. But his wife is a worse singer than he is. Why is he still not won over? That may be a bit of a bad thing with the script, but that's part of the third act problems.
A second unpopular opinion. Santa Claus is Coming to Town is among the worst Christmas carols. The only reason I think it's popular is because it's really easy for school children to sing, so we all have to sing it growing up. But it's just such a terrible song.
Well started by Zooey Deschanel, though, because she can sing, although Mary Steenburgen, at least in this role, can't. Maybe she's not supposed to. Probably not a very good singer to begin with.
I'll do another third unpopular opinion. Ed Asner, miscast as Santa. I hate him as Santa. He's such a gruff jerk.
As Why? He is in the Rudolph special. We talked about that when we did that
also terrible
commentary a few years ago, where he's an asshole to
he's
Rudolph.
The worst. Yeah, he's not a bully like he is in the Rudolph special. He's not necessarily a bad guy, but why wouldn't Santa have a little bit of Christmas? Like, Santa's supposed to be Christmas cheer incarnate, and yet he seems so annoyed and impatient with everybody.
That's become a more common modern thing with Christmas characters, especially Santa himself. I'm going to talk about the Christmas Chronicles later in the podcast. And Kurt Russell is not quite as irritable, as disinterested, if you will, as Ed Asner is in this movie. But it's the same kind of deal where he's not completely jolly either. He doesn't really fit that mold. Don't forget, we're criticizing Asner and Caan for their performances, but they are going by what the screenplay said. I think Caan doesn't seem like he's present in the roles, like he's not present in the job. And maybe if you talk to him, he'd say, but I love that movie. Will Ferrell was wonderful. Mary Steenburgen was great. It's possible that's the way he felt. It isn't come across that way. Asner, by the way, getting back to him for a second, we know from Mary Tyler Moore long ago in the 70s, and then, of course, he's the voice of Carl in Up, which we'll probably cover next year. Did you know he's 90 next November? And he's still very active.
Wow.
His IMDb list is pretty long. Bob Newhart is also 90 next year. He's only made 15 movies. He's Papa Elf, of course. He's best known for his own TV shows. I like how he opens the movie with the voiceover and then closes the movie with the voiceover. We don't really see him all that much in the film. He's never once shown, he's mentioned a few times, but never shown once Buddy leaves the North Pole and then goes back. In that whole stretch of time, there's no flashbacks. What does Papa Elf think about this? Nothing like that going on.
The character of Papa Elf, as performed by Bob Newhart, is as close of an approximation to my own father as I've ever seen in cinema. And yeah, you can back me up.
Including his look.
He looks like my dad. And then his whole persona, the slow but smart and serious but good-humored and patient. Everything about him is exactly like my dad, to the point where it's eerie, but I think it gives me this extra warm reaction to this movie. And I was saying to you when we watch it, when the time comes that my father passes away, I won't be able to watch Elf for like a decade.
He's well cast. Who do you think could have played the roles better? Have you thought about that? Asner and Khan, if we don't like them in these performances. I think Asner's fine. I like him better than you do. The whole deal behind him being the way he is fine. That's the way it was written. So he's kind of playing what we saw 6 years later when he was Carl and Up. Same idea, I think, in a lot of ways. This gruff old man.
What if it was John Goodman? Just somebody who can...
You're fat shaming now because you want a fat guy to play the...
Okay, fine. John Goodman is Walter.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. I could, taller.
I actually thought of him as Walter first, and then I was like, yeah, but he kind of looks like he could pass for Santa with a beard, so just somebody who has a bigger personality. This is a big film, and everybody else in the movie is big, but James Conner has far too much subtlety to his performance.
Michael and Jovi, Daniel Tay and Zooey Deschanel, I don't think they're big. They're actually mostly underplaying, but then once a kid... Daniel Tay only made 5 movies in total, so...
Okay, but then when they get turned to Buddy's side... Both of them have big animated reactions. When they're having the snowball fight in Central Park, Danny Tay, his eyes are bugging out of his head, and he has a big goofy smile on his face, and then he's literally skipping with Buddy
and
down the streets
and
jumping the elevator.
And the beds in the department store.
It's so funny.
All it takes is that snowball fight to win over Michael, because before that he's annoyed. I love the scene when they're walking in the park. Who's your friend? Do you have a best friend? I saw a dog. I did that to you literally once without even meaning to sound like him, an elf, and I talked as fast as I often do. As he is in that scene, I had seen a dog on the street. It was this weird, cute little thing, and you came home that night and I said, I saw a dog today. And I wasn't trying to quote this movie, and I realized as soon as I said it, you laughed at me, and I thought, I sounded like Buddy, an elf, didn't I?
Listen, dogs are amazing. When I see a dog, it brightens my day, and I kind of want to tell people about it.
But during that moment, and the snowball fight is seconds later, Michael doesn't want anything to do with this guy, and as soon as they win the snowball fight, then he does. Okay, well, there you go. Buddy is human, of course, but he's also superhuman. He does things like getting only 40 minutes of sleep, and that's a lot by his standards, and then making the rocking horse. Even though he's terrible at making the Etch-A-Sketches, he still makes, what is it, 80 of them? Or no, more than that. It's a lot of Etch-A-Sketches by any normal standards. And really, who wants Etch-A-Sketches anymore, by the way? In 2003, even, let alone 2018.
They play a big part in this movie. They're everywhere.
Well, yes, look at him drawing the Mona Lisa on the damn thing. The snowball fight. We don't see him make the snowballs, but you hear it. And then when he throws them, you see his superhuman ability to throw stuff. He may not be an elf, but he's still not human either. He's... not an elf, not yet a human. He's somewhere in between.
It's one of those things you just accept about the movie.
So
that he
even
has, like,
though
a little bit of magic,
he may not think he fits at the North Pole. He does. He's not as great as the elves at making toys, but he really does belong there in the end anyway. When he's looking at those teddies, which of course is a good little payoff, and you even see the teddy as they're opening presents in the very last few shots when they're all together at Christmas and the little wrap up. But he's looking at the teddies, and that leads to his job in the toy department, which leads to meeting Jovi. It's probably not supposed to be a sort of a sexual kind of connection, because the teddy's not for her anyways, for his father, which is a nice touch. For someone special. But I noticed that. He looks at the teddy, and that leads to the job, which leads to the Jovi thing. The best scene in the movie is probably not this, but it's way up there, and that's the Baby It's Cold Outside song, which has become controversial recently. It's a lovely duet with Zooey Deschanel and Will Ferrell. I didn't even know that song when I first saw this movie.
I feel like it became popular again, partially because of Elf. Controversy aside, if you ignore the lyrics, it's such a pretty song.
Especially when the two of them sing it together. Mm. What do you think of the controversy? Because it's one of those songs that no Christmas carols need to be there. If we find out that Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, which is about bullying, was that offensive to somebody, and we pulled it from the regular play, would we really miss it that much?
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is against the bullying. I feel like the song comes out on the side of the victim.
But only because he has a talent that they even care about him.
Okay, fine. But don't you feel bad for bullying? It's definitely the message of that song, however misled it might be.
His freak nose pays off, is what it comes down to.
As for Baby Is Cold Outside, it was written in the 40s, I think. It's a couple that both want it, but she's afraid of looking like a slut. She needs the cold as an excuse. She wants him to coerce, you know, sometimes you want somebody to coerce you to stay. So every time she's like, oh, maybe just a half drink more, maybe just a cigarette more, it's because she's easily convinced.
Okay.
That's how I always interpret it.
Seduce me, then, is what she's saying.
Well, it's not even a seduction. He's not even saying, come to bed with me. He's just saying, hey, it's cold. I just want you to stay and keep me company. It's not even that strongly implied that they're going to have sex. It's more like he just wants to spend time with her. You can interpret it many different ways when you put it in the context of, oh, he's a creep that's just trying to guilt a woman into sleeping with him. Of course it's awful. It's so vague that you could put it in that context and it could be convincing. And apparently it's from a movie. She legitimately wants to leave, and he's a creep.
Yeah.
So once I heard that, I was like, oh, there goes my whole theory that the intentions of the song were far more cheeky and flirty and innocent.
The CBC, as of us recording this podcast, had pulled it from playing it on the radio station. And then because there is an outcry about it, they put it back on. And that was actually on the National. They talked about that. Now, maybe that's going to change again in the meantime. But as we record this podcast, it's back on the air. And I don't know if that's a big outcry or not.
All you have to do is record a version where the woman plays a man's part.
And I've heard that's what they did.
The woman's part. Yeah. Then
they've done that.
I think you're right. Then everybody can just enjoy a pretty song again. I'm probably talking out of turn right now.
We don't really have any.
I'm not usually
dog
this exasperated
this
with.
Let's
with
move on to something that I got another reasonably good question that's kind of along these lines. Would Jovi really be interested romantically?
No.
Cold outside or not, in Buddy.
This is the biggest suspension of disbelief.
This man-child?
In this whole movie, that Jovi, who appears up to this point to be maybe a lonely, but a perfectly reasonable person who sees the world for what it is, would never get romantically involved with somebody who is in arrested development. Although she is quite lonely. They make it quite clear she is spending Christmas Eve eating ramen noodles by herself in her apartment. So she just needs to get through the holidays, as she says. So the implication is strong that she might actually have no family, and somebody like that might be more vulnerable to someone like Buddy, who just does everything wrong. And there is a charm to him. I can get his brother being charmed by that. But you know what scene I never want to see is the first time they get intimate and his reaction to
they
all
they have a child.
Sex. And then she goes full elf because she's wearing the elf costume when they visit the North Pole.
Another running theme in this is eating. And the cotton-headed Ninny Muggins, I love that line so much, eats a lot of cotton and so much candy.
The cotton was cotton candy.
Yes, but as a character, he's eating cotton.
And it looks really convincing.
When he eats it in front of the girl who wants a Susie Talks a Lot, that's such a sweet look. That little girl wins you over, too.
Oh, she's
just
so
like
cute.
He wins you over through the whole film. The spaghetti. I love that. That almost makes me cry sometimes. It's so sweet because you remembered. The spaghetti and candy scene when Will Ferrell pours all the syrup on the spaghetti and then all the candy and the Pop-Tarts and all that shit.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And eats it made him puke the first time. Why he swallowed any of it, I don't know. But then they do longer takes than you ever see in movies until the director says cut. Maybe Jon Favreau fucked with him and said, let's just let Will keep on eating it until I say cut.
But apparently it didn't just make him throw up. He had persistent headaches
and all
he
the sugar.
Couldn't sleep at night. Actors have done worse for their craft.
I mentioned a great line is cotton-headed Ninny Muggins, but my favorite line in the whole movie is definitely when he's in the mailroom. It's like the North Pole, except it smells like mushrooms and everyone looks like they want to hurt me. And he makes friends with that guy so quickly. Looks like it's a matter of minutes before they're buddies. You're my best friend. No one cares about my ideas. I got a lot of ideas. Oh, your ideas are great. I know they're great. It's an unnecessary scene, but it's fun. Leading into that, another reasonably good question. He's wearing that day his father's suit, or at least it seems to be. He's dressed just like his dad. He's a lot taller than James Caan.
Yeah.
So where'd he get both the jammies he wears earlier and that suit?
Well, James Caan is rich.
They could have gone to a tailor that morning, I guess.
You could buy a suit off the rack and get something half decent.
I mentioned, by the way, that Buddy is superhuman. The other thing I forgot to mention is that he survives that long, long walk from the North Pole wearing just his elf costume. He doesn't have any food, have any shelter, doesn't have any proper outfit that he could survive as a human. Even an elf should not make that journey. And again, you're not supposed to bring this up, but that's what we do on podcasts just like this one. That's the fun of it. He should have died on the way, not making the trip into the Lincoln Tunnel. He almost does die in the brawl with Miles Finch. My mom loved the line where Miles runs on the table. Look at you! Who knew Peter Dinklage would become as big a name in this entire cast? Maybe bigger than Will Ferrell? And the only person that even could be a bigger name than him is Will Ferrell. Peter Dinklage is a giant star now with Game of Thrones, and whatever he does next, he's going to be a bankable star. Maybe not in movies, although maybe. But certainly in TV.
Because he's a little person, he may have to forge his own path. Because even with the success of Game of Thrones, and even just Tyrion Lannister as one of the most beloved characters of the decade, there's still not a lot of roles for little people where it's not all about being a little person. I think it was an interview with him once where he was like, I know there will be progress when I can play a character that wasn't written as a little person.
And this role obviously is written that way because you need him to be mistaken for an elf. When Buddy comes in the office in that scene, he's crazy in love. I'm in love and I love it. I don't care who knows it. But then he contemplates suicide later that day just because Dad yells at him. Now his dad does tell him, get out of my life. But he does lose that love pretty fast. Don't you remember the Jovi? Well, then again, maybe she doesn't feel the same way, but he thinks she does. So again, it's a plot point, but I'm on top of the world. I'm ready to kill myself. One of the influences from another movie on this film is probably from It's a Wonderful Life.
Gotta be.
Where he's standing on a bridge contemplating killing himself. And what saves the two guys in both movies is trying to help someone else. Jimmy Stewart jumps in the water because he's got to save Clarence. And in this, Buddy sees Santa's sleigh crash in Central Park. Things always have to happen on big days in the movies. And this, of course, is Christmas Eve where we have the big climax take place. We didn't love the third act. It's not awful, but it is the worst part of the film.
The script really forces that underwhelming climax with Santa's sleigh. It all feels really phony and forced. And it's so removed from the central conflict and the relationships in the film. Buddy has barely any relationship to speak of with Santa. And no story in the film hinges on characters having Christmas spirit, really. And then there's the Central Park Rangers. That just seems really shoehorned in there. Everybody in New York is fixed to News 1 on Christmas Eve. Even children. There is even a bar full of patrons who look like bikers. And even bikers have families who are paying strict attention to the news.
The ultimate plot point. That the little kids especially. The bikers thing, I'm with you, but more so the little kids.
The little girl's watching the news by herself.
So is the black boy, the little black boy. Yes!
It's Christmas Eve, why are you alone at all? You're either asleep, or you're with your family.
Or you're watching a movie, or you're watching cartoons, or you're playing video games, if you're a little kid like they are.
News.
Well, it is Charlotte Denon, and as Matt Walsh. That is Matt Walsh, we now know him from Veep and Hangover and so many things he's done. He's the one who's obsessed with her. Your eyes tell the story.
There's quite a few actors that were not big deals when this movie came out who have become big deals. Matt Walsh is one. Peter Dinklage is another. Amy Sedaris is another. Zooey Deschanel, of course.
She's got a starring role. A lot of these other people have got smaller roles. Andy Richter, who'd been on Conan at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Kyle Gass from Tenacious D
with
Jack Black. They're a great combination. I like them together, actually.
But in their other lives, they're both sidekicks to these way bigger personalities. Because, what's his name again? Jack Black's...
Kyle Gass.
Kyle Gass. He's the other half of Tenacious D. And, of course, Andy Richter is Conan's sidekick.
And like we said a while ago, these three people seem to like working for Walter, despite Walter's gruffness. And I don't really know that you can call him an asshole the same way.
Also, there's Francisco.
That's fun to say. Don't forget about Artie Lang, who plays the Santa.
Yes.
How'd you like to be dead? Another name from before as a kid, and this is a movie we could have covered this year because it's a big-time favorite of Christmas movies and also an anniversary, A Christmas Story, which came out in 83, which you're not a big fan of. Peter Billingsley, who was Ralphie in A Christmas Story, is Ming Ming, one of the elves. He's a Jon Favreau and Vince Vaughn friend. I think he's a production partner with Vince Vaughn.
He is Vince Vaughn's production.
But he knows Favreau through Vaughn, I guess, and he's got a role in this movie. I think he's been in other Favreau movies, maybe, but he certainly works with Vaughn in a production capacity. Let's get through the rest of my reasonably good questions. A little out of sync now, out of order at least. Why don't the adults, in this movie especially, believe in Santa Claus? Presents appear under the tree that they haven't delivered.
Well, this is the question of most Christmas movies.
But especially one...
If there was a Santa, then you would figure it out pretty freaking quickly once you had kids.
But a lot of Christmas movies don't actually have a Santa Claus, and this one does. And he's been delivering presents all along. Speaking of Santa, it's funny, of course, when Buddy goes, Santa! I know him! I know him! But why is he so charged up? He does know him. That'd be like if we knew somebody famous. We know a few people that are relatively famous. If someone were to get all worked up, oh my God, it's that guy. We'd be excited too, maybe, but it'd be, well, but that's just the guy we know.
Okay, but let's say that I went away to New York by myself, and then as a complete surprise, I learned that you were coming to visit.
You wouldn't be this excited.
I'd be a little excited,
not
Ryan.
Not this excited.
Ryan, I know him.
Husband. My last RGQ is, why is everyone working late on Christmas Eve? It's not just the kids watching TV as part of that montage. And we know that Walter's assistants are all working late. Okay, fine. But all these other people, the mailroom, they're still in the fucking mailroom. And it's just so they're going to have everyone singing Santa Claus is Coming to Town, which is sweet. But stores do close, man. A running theme in the movie that works really well, too. And I'm not usually a fan of this necessarily, unless you do it right. But pratfalls.
Oh, yeah.
You mentioned the car hitting Buddy when he first gets to New York, when he jumps into the Christmas tree, which is a meme people love to use online.
That has to be a stunt double because he leaves the frame and then...
The Christmas tree one, yeah, for sure. The tree falling on him. And these aren't really so much pratfalls, but when he's supposed to be Bigfoot, that's a funny gag. And the Jack-in-the-Box gag when he's still at the North Pole. Apparently, Jon Favreau had a little thing off camera and he would make the thing pop up when he wanted to. So Farrell would be whining it, not yet, not yet. Ugh! So he'd make him legitimately be surprised. Zooey Deschanel is glowing in this movie. She's not my physical ideal in Hollywood. There's a lot of great-looking women, and she certainly is one of them. But I wouldn't say she's as beautiful as, say, another Zoe, Deutscht.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of Zoes around these days.
It was a popular
Those
name.
Two plus Zoe Saldana. Mm-hmm. Deschanel does this kind of character well, the new girl, 500 Days of Summer. Did you like her in the role?
Yeah, I really like Zooey Deschanel. She's never really become an A-lister. She had her TV show, which I watched for a while and then got sick of. Her charm really works on me. And prior to this was The Good Girl. I don't know if she had done much other than The Good Girl before this.
She was in The Good Girl. You don't mean The New Girl.
Yeah, The Good Girl.
The movie.
Yeah, the
movie. Aniston, okay.
Yeah, with Aniston. And in that movie, she's this low-energy, cynical weirdo. Maybe because she's so cute, she can do a little extra cynical when she's doing a part like this, and you can still find her lovable because she has those gigantic eyes.
Yeah, like you, has those great big eyes. And the Mary Steen version, who is the very effective foil to James Caan, although, like so many movies, she's not really in the movie other than to be somebody's wife or a love interest, but she's already married, so a wife. She was an Oscar winner a long time ago for Melvin and Howard. Love her in Back to the Future Part 3. But the most recent thing that I've seen her do, because I haven't seen Book Club, I think that was this year, The Last Man on Earth TV show, which has gone off the air, unfortunately, left on a cliffhanger. I never really loved her in that show, though, actually. I like her way more in these sweet roles, like in Back to the Future Part 3 and in Elf.
I'm with you.
The fact that she always hated Will Forte's character in that, yes, he screws up a lot, and they have a right not to like him, but all of them hate him more than they really should. Which I know is the comedy, and Forte knows what he's doing with his own show as far as they all dislike me except my wife. But it's one of the things I didn't love about that show, and I don't know that she really pulled that off. She's a good actress, but I don't think she was all that great in that show, actually.
Yeah, she has to be like a warm, kind person. She's a surly drunk in that show. And Will Ferrell was also in Last Man on Earth.
As her love interest, too.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Oh, ironic. And speaking of Mary Steenburgen, there's these crackpot theories on the internet. Elf is a prequel to Step Brothers. She's his mother in Step Brothers, but something happened to Walter, and then she adopted Buddy, who's like a grown child, and then fell in love with Richard Jenkins. Richard Jenkins also could have played a great Walter Hobbs, actually.
Yeah, true.
And then that's when they met. I can't remember his
name. John C. Reilly.
Yeah.
And Richard Jenkins, yes. So what happened to Michael? What happened to Jovi?
I'm not saying it's a real... It's just a fun theory because she plays his stepmother in Elf and then plays his mother in Step Brothers.
Okay. I love, by the way, that Ferrell will do a tiny and a truly tiny, just like John Hamm did on Last Man on Earth, role in a show like that, which was not some giant zeitgeisty show. It wasn't The Simpsons at its peak where anyone wanted to be in it. But Will Ferrell was in the show in a long shot and he gets killed right away. I don't think he has any on-screen dialogue. John Hamm did something similar in another season of that show.
Every season started with a big cameo. Jack Black was one once.
Also very briefly, though. These guys don't stay on the show for a while.
That was just like a running gag in the show. Hmm. We are the long-suffering only fans of Last Man on Earth. Nobody watched it. Except us, somehow.
It was part of the Fox Sunday thing, and I still watch The Simpsons. Bev gave up on it just this year. We still watch Family Guy, despite the fact that that show should be off the air at this point. It has nothing really to say anymore. But of those three, when they were all on Fox Sundays together, the first one we would watch the next day or something would be The Last Man on Earth.
I miss it. I really would have loved to see where they were going with the cliffhanger, but that's quite the diversion we just took.
Back to Elf. So the director, I mentioned already, Jon Favreau, He probably got Iron Man because of this unexpected success, and that wasn't expected to be the success it was, I don't think, on that level, and that helped make Robert Downey Jr. one of the biggest stars in the world.
Another movie where you have pitch-perfect casting. I can complain about the casting of James Caan and Ed Asner, but when it comes to casting his stars, this man has it figured out.
I think he's actually underrated as a director, because to work with Downey and to get such a landmark performance, we may look back in 20 or 30 years and say that him as Iron Man is one of the most important roles of the early part of the century, because it really did lead into the MCU. If that movie had failed, we maybe wouldn't have the MCU. We certainly wouldn't at the level that we do now, I don't think.
And Iron Man is a good movie.
And Tom Cruise was the name that I think was bandied about. I'm sure a lot of other names were too. But Cruise was somebody people talked about before. I'm sure he would have done the role just fine, but he's Tom Cruise. He wouldn't have been able to be controlled. Well, Downey makes a ton of money and has a lot of control now. But it would have been a Cruise movie from the start. And it was not a Downey movie from the start. It was a Kevin Feige Marvel movie, and that was very important. Favreau directs these actors very well. We talked about how good Will Ferrell is in this. The Jungle Book was a gigantic hit. The Lion King got a record number of views when the trailer went on YouTube. I don't know why. It looks like the exact same movie as the animated film.
It's shot for shot.
I'll probably watch it on the big screen. I'll certainly see it at some point. I don't get why it's such a favorite thing. But it's going to be a blockbuster.
It is an animated film. It's not live action. It's just computer animated.
Lions and tigers and bears, oh my. There are no humans at all in the entire story.
They did not train a lion cub to sing.
Just can't wait to be animated. Favreau's also got a Ramis-esque cameo, because Ramis appears as a doctor in one of his best movies, maybe his very best movie, Groundhog Day. Well, so does Favreau in this. He's the doctor that tells Walter that his son is indeed Buddy.
It's a boy.
He does a pretty good job of the first perspective and the big, small sets. I mentioned Lord of the Rings that same year by New Line. Well, that was probably the best, even now, use of the bigatures and the perspective thing with the hobbits and Gandalf and the bigger people. Terry Zwigoff, though, could have been the man at the helm of this movie. He could have directed it. He did Bad Santa instead. Worked out great for everybody.
Could you imagine?
But had he directed this movie, it's not a $170 million blockbuster. No way.
It would have been a completely different movie. A much darker, more messed up movie. That man has a twisted mind.
It might have failed with this script, which was by David Barenboim, who's only written 5 movie scripts in his entire career. I don't know why he hasn't written more screenplays. Maybe Favreau's used him in a behind-the-scenes way. A lot of writers, including Shane Black, who directed Iron Man 3 with Downey, have been behind the scenes polishing screenplays, and they make their money that way. And you think, why has this guy got 5, 6, 10 credits in 25 years of working? Well, because they're doing other things, and they're getting paid behind the scenes, their uncredited rewrites and stuff. Maybe Barenboim has done that, but I don't know why he didn't get an entirely huge career out of this screenplay, because maybe it's all the credit that goes to Farrell and Favreau, but this guy wrote a screenplay of a huge hit and a pretty damn good screenplay.
And Farrell did do a pass of the script. He's uncredited. But him and his writing partner, Adam McKay,
right,
who I think was his SNL writing partner,
yeah,
they did pass of the script. You may know Adam McKay. He directed Step Brothers, along with some other comedies, and more famously now, The Big Short and Vice.
Vice, which
year,
I think, comes out tomorrow, Christmas Day, I believe it is. And that's getting a lot of raves for Christian Bale as Dick Cheney. Another crazy physical transformation for Christian Bale. He's done that so often in his career. And then Sam Rockwell plays George W. Bush.
And Steve Carell is Rumsfeld.
All right, Elf is 185-1. We watched the Blu-ray, which I think looks pretty damn good. The movie has to be bright as a comedy. Most comedies are bright. The cinematographer, Greg Gardner, who has no other credits with Favreau, doesn't mean anything, but I was wondering about that when somebody works well with somebody else and then doesn't get used again. Most of Gardner's credits are pretty mediocre. The editor, Dan Leventhal, has worked with Favreau a lot, though, and he's also a Marvel guy because he's cut Ant-Man and Spider-Man Homecoming. And the composer, John Debney, has 100-plus credits, including The Passion of the Christ, 2004, and Sin City, 2005. Very different from Elf. Now, I know the look of the film is not much to really speak of, but what do you think of the cutting? Because the movie's about 95 or so minutes long, and it doesn't overstay its welcome.
So I always hate to be too speculative about editing, because you just never know what somebody's working with. But I wonder if they could have rescued the third act in post. If they could have done something to maybe take out the elements that don't work and focus on the elements that did. But speaking of things that are cut, there's a great deleted scene that you can find pretty easily back in the North Pole, Buddy playing hockey with his fellow elves. It's pretty cute. Have you seen it?
No, but I love the shot where he's playing basketball with them.
It's very similar in tone.
Okay. I mentioned the influence of the movie already. The last one I've got here is that Farrell could make a fortune if you let them do a sequel. And they've tried, but he keeps saying no.
He doesn't need a fortune.
I don't know what you would do with this story as a sequel. I'm not creative enough, I guess, to think about that. He needs to save Christmas again?
Well, yeah, that's like all sequels.
He'd be Santa.
He has an interesting
That's
career.
What it would be. He'd be Santa.
You think so?
I'm thinking of it right now. I don't know. What else would it be?
That could work.
Santa dies. He takes over the jobs like the Santa Claus. The Elf Claus.
You need another angle that is a fish out of water, because that's his whole charm. He couldn't continue to be this guileless and oblivious to the world.
He's wearing regular clothes in the end montage when they're doing Christmas. And one of the nice touches in that end montage, when you see them all around the tree, the first shot actually is James Caan playing the piano with Jovi singing. So here's this person who we know can sing but would never do it in front of people until she made herself do it to try to save Christmas. And here's the guy who was a grump the whole movie playing music and seeming to love that he's doing it with his now daughter-in-law singing right beside him. That's a nice touch.
It is pretty lovely.
And if you look around, you see the huffboard, the skateboard, is one of Michael's presents. You see the teddy, the giant thing of syrup, which will last Buddy probably 10 minutes.
That wasn't from Santa, though. That was a gift from Emily.
Right, exactly. This movie had no Oscar or AFI love of any kind, and that seems weird. I think the comedies list had already come out, so it wouldn't have made that. It couldn't have. But if you redid things, it would definitely be at least a nominee, and how do you not have some of the lines from this movie? Maybe I just like them more than everyone else, but that line in the mailroom about they all want to hurt me, God, that makes me laugh every single time I've ever seen this movie.
Despite some stiff competition, because there are so many wonderful Christmas movies, I think if anybody were to ever compile a list of the best ever made, this would have to make the top 10.
Bad Santa, It's a Wonderful Life, pick your favorite version of the Scrooge / Christmas Carol story. A Christmas Story would make it for a lot of people.
Miracle on 34th Street.
Yes.
Christmas Vacation.
Yeah. That's almost a top 10 right there.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll get to our last thoughts on Elf in a minute before we get to that point. I mentioned I saw The Christmas Chronicles a few days ago. That's the Kurt Russell movie where he plays Santa Claus. It won me over. Considering you don't meet Santa Kurt for about 20 minutes... It says a lot that the two kids' serious story, because it's quite a serious one, didn't alienate me completely from what I was expecting to be a stupid romp for an hour and a half. I thought it was going to be over-the-top dumbness. And some people I like an awful lot raved about it. So I thought, okay, they can't be that wrong, but I still expected it to be stupid. And it is dumbass fun, but it also does pack a pretty nice emotional wallop. And Kurt Russell has some really great moments in it. I thought he'd be even more over-the-top and silly than he is. But I like the movie, and you should probably watch it.
Yeah, I'm right in the middle of my crazy Christmas right now, where my schedule is pretty chock-a-block and I don't have a ton of time to watch movies, but it's kind of on the short list.
Just talking about the year in general for podcasting for us, we did 44 movies, including this one today. The Dark Knight was our most popular episode. Big Lebowski was a fun one, also pretty popular. Pan's Labyrinth was one of the first ones of the year. Jurassic Park did pretty well a couple of months ago. And our horror movies in October were pretty popular with people. Sound like Donald Trump here, pat myself on the back. But I'm just mentioning these episodes because if you haven't listened to them, they were the ones that seemed to do the best for us. And also, I like those episodes a lot. I think we did well on Dark Knight. Big Lebowski, when I listened to it a few months later, I thought, I think we got that one pretty well. And I didn't know that we'd be able to cover it as well as we did because you just basically quote the movie. But I think we managed to do that and also cover the story and talk about all kinds of angles in it. And that's really the point of a podcast like this anyway. As far as the year at the movies in general, 2018, we've both seen so few, there's not much point in talking about it. We'll save it for the Oscars preview in a couple of months.
We're way behind.
I haven't seen very many of the blockbusters, really. I saw the biggest ones like Black Panther and Avengers Infinity War, Incredibles. I saw all of those, but I haven't seen other ones. I haven't seen Mission Impossible Fallout as of this recording, and I definitely want to. It looked like a great film. And then as far as the year in general, just the year, forget movies. It was a rough one politically for all of us. God, we had some family strife, and we lost Fox to cancer. He got the cancer and died on a Monday.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago.
I'll start crying. So for those reasons, I'll steal John Oliver's quote about 2016. Fuck 2018.
Seriously.
Let's explode it.
Although, fuck 2016, 2017, 2018.
Well, because of Fox and those other things I mentioned, this is the worst
personally,
year.
Personally, it's been a rougher year for us, yeah.
We had to move, although we've grown into this house pretty well. Look at the recording studio we have. The audio is so much better. All right, so our last thoughts on Elf. Let's get back to that for a few seconds here.
Flawed movie, but who cares? The charm just wins you over. It's a classic.
I don't watch this movie every year at Christmas, but certainly most Bad Santa is another one I might yet watch it before we get to Christmas, or might have watched it by the time this podcast airs. It's Wonderful Life, of course, is one of my very favorites. I definitely will see that before Christmas. And those other ones we just mentioned a few minutes ago are in that list too, or on that list too, but I would say Elf is even higher than them. It's more of a must-see, probably because it's funny and probably because of the spirit of it. Like Santa says to Buddy, you have more Christmas spirit than anyone I've ever known.
It's really pithy and short and fun too. Watchability is through the roof. I don't know if there's many movies that as an adult I have rewatched as many times as I've watched Elf.
Okay. All right, we'll be dark next Monday because it'll be New Year's Eve and we're due for a week off. When we return on January 7th, 2019, we'll be starting our fourth annual Month of Bev.
Happy Month of Bev!
She selected a trio of movies that begin with the letter H.
Not intentionally. It just happened that way. So guess what they are.
We'll see if you can pre-guess what they are, yeah. Well, I'm going to give away the first one right now, because I have to. The first one is the 30-year-old black comedy, Heathers. Did not succeed the box office. Very few people saw it back then. I thought maybe it was something that was a modest success. Nope.
It's pitch black. I think it was R-rated.
But it's very famous considering nobody saw it back then. Anyway, we'll talk about that more in 2 weeks. So the coming attractions trivia for Heathers. Of these five movies about bullying, which one has the best reviews on Rotten Tomatoes? Revenge of the Nerds, The Karate Kid, the 2011 documentary Bully, which we both saw at the Hot Dogs Film Festival and liked quite a lot, Mean Girls, which is obviously a cousin or even a daughter to Heathers, or Heathers, which has the best reviews.
So for the answer to that question, please check out our next podcast about Heathers. But what if you just can't wait till then? You need more Ryan and Bev in your life? Well, you can check out our website, top100project.com. Don't forget to subscribe to the Top 100 Project on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, you can check out our entire roster. We've covered hundreds of movies, including all 123 movies that made the AFI's 1998 and or 2007 lists of the best American movies ever made. Every episode is available for free, but perhaps in exchange you could leave us a rating or a review. If there is a movie that you would like Ryan and I to cover that we haven't covered yet, and you happen to mention that in a review on Apple Podcasts, we will seriously consider doing that film.
Quid pro quo.
Yes. If you would like to reach Ryan and me, we're both on Twitter. I am at Bev Ellis Ellis, and Ryan is at MovieFiend51. Or you can reach us by email, top100projectpodcast@gmail.com. And what's more, we would like to thank our sponsor, Sparkplug Coffee. Don't forget that you can enjoy a one-time 10% discount on any coffee purchase if you use the code top100project at checkout. That's all one word, top100project. Not case sensitive, and I can speak from experience when I say that it legitimately makes a great present. I know it's probably a little late because it's Christmas Eve, but you can order it online and tell them it's on the way.
New Year's Eve presents.
A little late for a stocking stuffer, but
you can't save it for a year either. It's going to go bad.
Oh, no. You got to have it fresh.
I forgot to give you a hug. Hug me. Did I miss?
Hugs are my favorite.
You missed.
And cut.